Order.
Hello, I'm Tom Fruin, standing in for Hinea Ahu, to bring you the Week in Parliament with myself and Rhys Lyon. And this week begins at 2pm this Tuesday, April the 28th, with MPs back in the debating chamber after a lengthy adjournment that began before Easter, to hear this announcement from the Speaker, David Carter.
Honourable Members, I have received from the Electoral Commission a writ dated 14 April 2015, declaring Right Honourable Winston Peters to be elected to represent the electorate of Northland. Honourable Members, I wish to advise the House that I have received a letter from the Right Honourable Winston Peters resigning his List seat in the House with effect at midnight on 23 April 2015. I have received from the Electoral Commission a return declaring Rhea Iris Daphne Bond to be elected a Member of Parliament to fill the vacancy created by the resignation of Right Honourable Winston Peters from his List seat. I understand that Rhea Bond is present and wishes to take the oath. Would she please come forward to the Chair on my right?
I, Rhea Iris Daphne Bond, swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God.
Speaker then informed the House of the death of two former members.
Honourable Members, I regret to inform the House of the death on 10 April 2015 of Dorothy Catherine Jellicks QSO and recipient of the New Zealand Suffrage Centennial Medal, who represented the Hamilton West electorate from 1972 to 1975. Mrs. Jellicks had made many notable achievements. Amongst them, she was the first woman in New Zealand's parliamentary history to open the address in reply debate. I also regret to inform the House of the death on the 16th of April 2015 of the Honourable Ronald Leslie Bailey, QSO, who represented the Heratonga electorate from 1960 to 1981. Mr. Bailey was Minister of Railways and Minister of Electricity from 1974 to 1975 and Chairman of Committees from 1973 to 1974. I desire on behalf of this House to express our sense of the loss we have sustained and our sympathy with the relatives of the late former members. I now ask members to stand with me and observe a period of silence as a mark of respect for their memory.
Deputy Prime Minister Bill English then led the House in a motion recognising the severity of the recent earthquake in Nepal before taking the first question of the day from one of his own national backbenchers, Chris Bishop.
My question is to the Minister of Finance. What reports has he received about lower than expected inflation in New Zealand?
Honourable Bill English.
Speaker, Statistics New Zealand last week released the Consumer Price Index for the March quarter. It showed that the CPI fell by 0.3% in that quarter, following on a fall of 0.2% in the previous quarter, which means that on an annual basis, consumer prices increased by 0.1% in the year to March. As an example of how quickly things change, as recently as December, Treasury was forecasting that annual inflation to March would be 1.3%. At the same time, though, as we are seeing low inflation, in fact very low inflation, which is usually associated with low growth in the economy, we are in fact seeing solid real economic growth. Latest figures from Statistics New Zealand show the economy grew 3.5% in the last year, among the fastest in the developed world.
Mr. English then faced a question addressed to his Prime Minister from Labor's Deputy Leader.
Honourable Annette King.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question's to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by his statement that, quote, there's always a risk with third-term governments, they get arrogant. There's always a risk that they will veer off into a space they haven't been and start surprising their supporters?
Honourable Bill English, on behalf
Mr.
of the Speaker, Prime Minister.
On behalf of the Prime Minister, yes, an observation based on watching the third term of the previous Labor government.
Supplementary
question, Honourable Annette King.
Was pulling the hair of a woman worker in a cafe arrogant? veering off into a space he hadn't been before, or just totally inappropriate behaviour?
Honourable Bill English.
Mr Speaker, as the Prime Minister has acknowledged it was totally inappropriate behaviour, for which he apologised to the young woman concerned, and I might say well before public attention was drawn to the matter.
Supplementary
question, Honourable Annette King.
Does he think that in modern New Zealand that it is okay to describe repeated and unwelcome pulling of a young woman's hair as banter, horseplay, joking around? If not, why has he attempted to minimise his weird behaviour?
Honourable Bill English, on behalf of the Prime Minister.
On behalf of the Prime Minister, he hasn't attempted to minimise the behaviour. He's acknowledged the inappropriate nature of that behaviour and dealt with the issue when it was drawn to his attention.
Supplementary question,
Honourable Annette King.
Was the National Party warned of his hair-pulling behaviour before his actions became public? If so, when?
Insofar as there's Prime Ministerial responsibility, the Honourable Bill English.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Prime Minister, of course the Prime Minister had an indication about the behaviour because the young woman raised it with him and he apologised to her. I might say that the Prime Minister has, through intensive interaction with the public over a long period as leader of the National Party and Prime Minister, observed almost always the highest standards of appropriate behaviour.
Supplementary question, Mr Speaker.
Supplementary question, the Honourable Annie King.
Was there any communication between his office or staff and Rachel Glucina or the cafe owners following the breaking of the story?
Honourable Bill English, on behalf of the Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Prime Minister, I haven't had the opportunity to establish whether that's the case or not, so simply can't answer that question.
Supplementary question,
the Honourable Annie King.
Does he stand by his statement that he, quote, needs to be better at reading the tea leaves when making decisions about how he will behave in public? If so, how often does he use tea leaves for advice?
The Honourable Bill English on behalf of the Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Prime Minister, yes, he does stand by that statement. I might say part of the Prime Minister's disappointment at these events and the inappropriateness of behaviour and the inappropriateness of his behaviour is that in almost every other respect his interaction with New Zealanders is positive.
Supplementary question, the Honourable Annette King.
What is the difference between his behaviour and that of Aaron Gilmore's?
Honourable Bill English. Order.
Mr Speaker, they're different circumstances and have both been dealt with appropriately.
Order, Mr Speaker.
A point of order, the Honourable
I Annette seek
King.
Leave to table a Facebook post on the National Party's website
order,
where
order.
Ms Bailey
need,
told
order.
Of the hair pulling.
I don't need any further assistance. It's available to all members if they want to look for it. Question number three. Have a point of order?
No, supplementary question.
Oh, supplementary question. The Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Putting aside the numerous Cafe Parnell incidents, how does the Acting Prime Minister explain the countless photographs of Mr Key stroking young girls' hair, and what psychological condition is that?
Honourable Bill English.
Well, Mr Speaker, I reject all the imputations of that question. The Prime Minister has a track record which I know opposition parties resent, and that is of very positive interaction with the whole range of the New Zealand community. In this case, he has acknowledged the inappropriateness of his behaviour and dealt with it well before it came to public attention because, in his view, if the young woman felt that way about the behaviour, then it clearly wasn't appropriate and he had to deal with it.
Question.
Supplementary question, the Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Putting aside the Parnell Cafe case, what about the numerous other cases where he has not apologised at all, and how does he explain that?
Honourable Bill English.
Well, Mr Speaker, almost without exception, the interactions the Prime Minister has with the New Zealand public are not the subject of complaints. In fact, more than any other Prime Minister, he's open to those interactions and they are positive. And if anyone felt that he had acted inappropriately, they are able to raise that issue. And I think, as indicated by this incident, the Prime Minister will take responsibility for his behaviour and apologise accordingly.
Questions to ministers were followed by the start of the annual financial review debate, expanded this year to fill 9 hours, for reasons that Rhys Lyon went in search of, starting by talking to Clerk Assistant David Wilson.
Could you tell us a little bit about the annual review debate and what it is and its purpose?
Sure. Well, in a formal sense, the annual review debate is actually the committee stage of the Appropriation Confirmation and Validation Bill. What that really means is that it marks a bringing to the end of Parliament's annual financial cycle, which starts with the budget and the government setting out its plans for the year and asking Parliament to approve its spending. This end of it, the annual review debate, is looking back at how that money's been spent, how entities have performed, and really how they've gone in achieving the government's goals. So it really is a way for Parliament to hold the government to account for its performance and its spending over the last financial year.
And we're looking at the 2013-14 year?
That's right, yeah. So shortly before we go into the budget for the next financial year, we're looking back at the previous one, which ended in June of 2014.
And things are a little bit different this year with the procedure?
That's right. So previously there have been two separate debates, one on the performance of government departments, and then a little bit later in the year, one on the performance of other entities, such as Crown entities and state enterprises. This year the two of them are together in one debate for a total of 9 hours. And one of the reasons for that is to do with the election, which occurred at the time when a lot of these entities would normally be reviewed, and also because of the timing of the election, it was felt better just to put these two things together and have one longer debate looking at the performance of all of the entities towards the government's against the government's goals, rather than separating them out. So the other thing that's a bit different about it this year is that rather than just debating the performance of individual entities, which is what's happened for many years, the House is going to structure the debate in themes. So it has themes around services for citizens, services to business, natural resources, justice, infrastructure, things like that, which cover the work of a variety of government agencies and also of select committees that have been scrutinising them. And the idea really is to have a debate on the government's performance against some of its key goals and in some of the areas that Parliament thinks are important to consider. So rather than, as I say, just looking at individual entities, it might look, for example, at the issues of housing and health and welfare and education altogether and what effect the government's programs in those areas have had. So that gets away, I think, from just looking at perhaps how individual departments have gone, what they've spent their money on, towards looking more at what are the outcomes that the government's trying to achieve and how's it going in achieving them.
And the annual review debate is normally held by the end of March, but this year it's obviously going to be a bit later. The annual reviews, the final date to report back was this week, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So most of the work on annual reviews is done by select committees. They are allocated all of the entities that present annual reports to Parliament to have a look at their performance. And normally they do that by March. Generally they aim to try and do it very early in the calendar year. But again, because of the timing of the election, it just wasn't possible to get all of that done. A lot of the time that committees would have met to do that work, members are away contesting the election. And so the date for it was pushed out. And as a result, the debate's going to occur this coming week. I thought it might be worth just mentioning some of the work that select committees do on this as well, because although this debate is now in the House, committees have spent hundreds of hours looking at the performance of entities, and that's really triggered by those entities presenting their annual reports to the House. Those are then allocated by the Finance and Expenditure Committee to all of the other committees to look at. They send written questions to all of those agencies, they hold public hearings with selected ones, and then they report on them and explain their findings and their views. And those reports from select committees are the basis of the debate that we're about to have in the House. So they'll be looking at the performance of the entities, their current operations, Did they deliver on the things that they received money for that was voted to them by Parliament? Are they achieving the government's outcomes? And one of the changes this year is actually just a change in the name to annual review rather than financial review. And I think although that's quite a small thing, it reflects the fact that the focus of the reviews has always been wider than simply how the money was spent and how it's accounted for. And certainly from the perspective of select committees and their members, they're very interested in the performance of agencies against certain goals. And so that's, I think, now reflected in the annual review title.
And you kind of mentioned before the debate, annual review debate, that's held entirely in committee.
That's correct. So the bill that I mentioned, the confirmation and validation bill, is something that's passed every year. And its first, second and third readings, where you normally have a debate, are held without amendment and without debate. So each of those stages only takes a few seconds. It's a matter of the minister in charge moving a motion and then the House voting. And really they save all of the debate for the committee of the whole House stage, which they're about to have, where this year, as I say, is going to be a 9-hour debate looking at all of those reviews and at the performance of the government according to its financial statements.
And that committee stage, that allows the ministers in charge of whatever area to sit there and answer questions from MPs. Mm.
Exactly right. Members have been, or members through the business committee have agreed how to allocate those speaking times, which are called calls in the House. So they're 5-minute opportunities to debate. Members can take more than one of them, and ministers will be in the House and be expected to respond to issues that members of various parties raise. Each party has a total number of calls in the debate based on the proportion of seats it holds in the House. And so you can expect to see the minister sitting at the front of the chamber beside the chair of the committee taking calls to respond to things that other members have raised or to make points of their own about the government's performance in this area.
And we'll see different ministers sort of coming and going from that slot.
That's right. So the government will choose the ministers that are represented in the House for those different slots, but you will see some fairly senior ones coming and going for different parts of that debate.
And the business committee's determination to make these changes this year, is there a precedent for that, or is this the first time?
Well, the business committee has quite often made determinations about how business will be carried out in the House. This is certainly the widest ranging determination it's made about financial scrutiny, and really made some quite significant changes, both in terms of timing, making the debate longer, consolidating it into one long debate, and also in terms of the subject matter, which has always been something that's been in its power to do, but recently members have agreed to try something a little bit different this year and see if that changes the nature of the debate.
And could we possibly see changes to standing orders if this goes well?
Well, we could. We'll certainly have a look at it, both members and staff of the Office of the Clerk, once the debate's over, to see whether there are any changes or things that we could do differently in the future. Whether we need to change standing orders is another matter. Most of these things can be done by the Business Committee by itself under existing standing orders.
Clerk Assistant David Wilson speaking there.
And as Rhys reported, MPs will be getting out their fine-tooth combs. We're looking at the financial performance of Crown entities, public organisations and state enterprises in the previous financial year. That's July 2013 through June 2014. Select committees have already heard from the respective board chairmen and senior executives, and their reports form the basis of the debate and will be the source of questions that MPs can put to the relevant ministers who sit down beside the committee chairman on the floor of the chamber. Given the fuss about Campbell Live on TV3, I thought it would be interesting to hear the views on news and current affairs of TVNZ, the state-owned television company, when its top brass appeared before the Commerce Committee, chaired by National's Melissa Lee, herself a television producer and presenter.
To the Commerce Select Committee, I'm so sorry that we're running slightly late, but we have actually caught up. We've got our chairman, Mr. Walden, and Mr. Kendrick, as well as Mr. Latch, who I do actually know.
Jeff Latch is the head of content, Kevin Kenrick is the chief executive, while Wayne Walden, the chairman, opened with the main bottom line numbers for the year 2013-14.
Net profit was $18.1 million, an increase of $3.7 million, or 25% up on the previous year. Return on equity at 10.8% was comfortably in excess of the target of 10.1%. having sold two of the Auckland properties at prices that were surplus to book value, proceeds of which will help to finance the refurbishment of our main building. And we also exited our shareholdings in both Hybrid Television and Eagle.
Both those items were to be the subject of questions. Noting that TVNZ had not paid a dividend for 2 years, Labor's broadcasting spokeswoman, Claire Curran, asked Kevin Kenrick if a dividend would be paid in the next financial year.
And what would have the dividend been in the year just gone? How much is the taxpayer contributing to the refurbishment of your main building?
Our expectation is that we would return to paying a full dividend in the 2016 financial year. I don't to hand have the exact number of what that dividend would have been, but I mean I can get that for you and provide it to the committee.
So do you have a ballpark figure?
Mr. Kenrick soon came up with one after a word in his ear from one of his advisers.
So over the last 2 years, it would be in the region of $22 million.
After extracting that figure of $22 million of withheld dividend to be spent on refurbishing its building, it was back to the chairman for an explanation of the approximately $30 million lost in two failed attempts to enter the pay TV market via TiVo and Iglu.
I think in terms of the first investment, I mean, there were some technology issues that that's the hybrid investment. There were some technology issues that we weren't particularly aware of. Not so much aware of, but really didn't, I think, understand what the ramifications of that might be, particularly in terms of the outdated nature of that technology. And I think in the Iglu situation, again, perhaps from the board's point of view, you know, some misalignment of the strategic views of both companies.
Those two companies being Sky and TVNZ, then under its former chief executive Rick Ellis, now chief executive at Te Papa. From pay TV to current affairs on free-to-air TV One, with this affirmation from Mr. Kenrick.
We are committed long-term to the production of news and current affairs because the skills and capabilities required are things that we do uniquely well.
But Claire Curran pointed out that not all current affairs shows were the same.
You say that the Sunday program is your most watched current affairs show with 600,000 odd viewers. Well, I'm sure
they're not all odd. Some of them are quite normal people.
Is Q&A funded by taxpayers to around 900,000 per year with around 70,000 viewers your least watched program? And why does this taxpayer funded program not have a bigger audience and is not being shown at a different time?
The chief executive invited a response from his head of content, Jeff Latch.
Sunday morning, traditionally, if you look across most major markets in the world, is a really good location to put current affairs programming.
Why is it that Q&A could not, which has such an investment and is such quality programming, as you say, why is that not being shown in prime time?
Well, because the audience that the show attracts is not significant enough for us to actually place it in prime time.
How do you know that it wouldn't, though? Because you're not giving it a chance.
I guess we have a great deal of research into the performance of a variety of different shows from a variety of different sources. And I guess it's our professional opinion that show would not deliver a massive audience.
And the opposition committee members were also interested in how the salary paid to the chief executive had risen to over $1 million a year. The chairman, Wayne Warden, said the board had sought independent advice before setting Mr. Kenrick's salary.
That advice clearly takes into account market trends and market payment bands.
Mr. Warden said the amount paid to the chief executive in the previous year was just his base salary.
So it did not include any incentive payment, which in fact was picked up in the following year, last year's report. So you don't have an apples with apples situation.
Asked to justify the 37% increase in the chief executive's take-home pay, Mr. Warden said it was in line with the market.
And it's pretty important. I mean, if we want to
attract, you know, top people to these positions. I mean, we really do have to take into account of what the market pays.
While the opposition members on the committee were interested in money and programs, on the government side, former Cabinet Minister Judith Collins had something completely different to raise with TVNZ's chief executive.
I want to ask you about TVNZ's commitment to gender equality and the way in which you portray women. We had an unfortunate incident about some blondes as some sort of competitors recently, which I think you stopped straight away. But just if I Google TVNZ blondes, first thing that comes up is Battle of Blondes Saga Goes On. That's one of your news reports. The story of two blondes, one silver dress and a cat fight ended up in whatever. No doubt extremely interesting to some parts of the population, but I'd say to a whole lot of women, it's just yet another further putting women down and basing our views of women on how they appear, or you know, terms like catfight and that. I expect a bit better from the state-owned broadcaster paid for by taxpayer dollars, and I just wondered if you were going to make some sort of commitment about that. And I also say to you the commitment to your staff, as well as your viewing public, to not have an environment where women feel that they are judged on the colour of their hair, or the length of their skirt.
Kevin Kenrick said he shared the concerns raised by Judith Collins.
The recent incident we had was poor judgment from someone who'd been in the business for a short period of time, who was responding to a competition that was run by a third party and used the same category that the third party had put forward. As far as I'm concerned, it was completely inappropriate and was treated accordingly. One of the things that we take great pride in as an organisation is the gender diversity that we have within the business. We have about 44% of the people in the business female, 56% male. Our board is 50-50. Our executive team, we have 25% who are female. We are about to host a session with the senior business leaders in the business from a female perspective in terms of women in business with the female directors of the business in terms of their personal development and how we can enable them to be more successful in that environment. And I just put that forward as being some balance in terms of some of the things we are doing, but I accept your criticism. I think it's valid.
TVNZ's Chief Executive Kevin Kenrick responding to questions at the State Broadcaster's annual financial review before the Commerce Committee. One of the potential topics for this week's annual financial review in the Chamber. More on our website at parliamenttoday or oneword.co.nz. I'm Tom Fruin, and I'll be back with Rhys Lyon and Hanea Ahu with another report from Parliament at the same time next week.